Three, two, one.
I admire those who says, I might not do everything right, but I have the willingness and I have the power to get more and more sustainable. And that's what we do. I'm completely not interested in why it's not working. I'm only interested in how it can work. The biggest risk today is to take no risk, but you have to take calculated risk.
Hey everyone, I'm Noor Tagori and this is The Process.
Welcome back to this episode of The Process. Today I am in Mr. Daniel Greeter, the CEO of Tommy Hilfiger's office. He has quite a fantastic office. And we're here to talk about the process of making a decision and really following your intuition. He is someone who has a lot of amazing personality, but also just a very innovative and creative mind, which is really amazing to see on the business side of things. And so I'm really intrigued and interested in having this conversation because, of course, we want to learn about the process of making a decision with an executive who has to make a lot of decisions every day. So welcome to this episode. Hope you enjoy. How is your day today?
My day was busy. Basically, I came from New York, just landed.
Just this
At 11 o'clock, I landed, had a shower, and then came here. And then we made the tour with Tommy, joined me. And we did a tour through the showroom, so showed him also the new collection, which
amazing.
He was very pleased. And then we went into interviews. All the designers, I don't know if you have seen it, were together and could ask him anything they want. So it was
That's
an exciting
awesome.
Moment. So here we are.
Really,
it's the first time I sit today in my office.
And we've been here longer than
yes.
you.
Yeah,
it's a pretty great
like.
Office. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having us and for taking the time to have this conversation. So you were talking about how you came in from New York after doing some on-the-ground work,
yes.
which I thought was really interesting. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, we went. We did a store tour. So we went. We analyzed the stores. We went to different department stores. We looked on how we look. We looked at how the competition looks like. We went also to the outlet stores. We went to the malls, and it's a pretty serious scene that you see at the moment in the U.S. because, as you know, traffic is down in general. There is a lot of department stores are closing, smaller stores. So it's a kind of a wake up call. What's going on there? And I think it's changing. You know, the world is changing, but
yeah.
also the industry is changing. And I think the U.S. is heavily hit at the moment with all what's happening. You know, the move from offline to online department stores that are closing, smaller shops, multi-brand stores that are closing. So it's, street, let's say Fifth Avenue, I haven't seen so many locations for rent.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of things happening. And we just went there and discussed with the team how we're going to go forward, how we can stay relevant in these more or less challenging times.
Well, when did you specifically start to see the shift this time around?
I think, honestly, it just happened a bit over the past 2 months because last year, you see a trend in general that everything is more to online, from offline to online.
Yeah.
But that's, was in a pace you saw that coming. And then we thought in January things are easing up a bit. But then came that coronavirus and Chinese tourists not coming anymore into the U.S. And that has an impact of, less traffic can be from 20% to 30%.
Wow.
And so this is just one crisis. But I think you have to get used to it because there can be something happening every
yeah.
day.
Well, how do you set up? Well, then let's take it to the beginning. How do you begin to set up a foundation in which a brand that's so big can remain stable through times like this?
Well, I think that's what you have to challenge yourself all the time, and that's what we do. You know, we always say, what you have done yesterday might be not good enough tomorrow. So you have to question yourself, and that's what we do. That's what we do with the team. And ask us every time, what can we do better? Where do we have to improve? Because you cannot, I think when you start sitting back and think, well, we are a great brand and we are doing well and, you know, things are good, I think that's the beginning of the end. So you have to, even when you're successful, you have to innovate yourself basically every day.
Yeah.
And come up with new ideas and allow also to implement new ideas. That's I think it makes it also exciting. So we are not afraid that there is a changing in the world and in the industry. We take it as a opportunity more than you know, like, oh my God, it's sad and you know, difficult. Yes, it's difficult, but it can be, as I said, an opportunity.
Well, you talk a lot about innovation. I'm pretty sure it's in your Instagram bio as well, which I thought was really clever. Tell me about when you were growing up and started being interested in pursuing maybe a career in fashion. Was it typically on the art side or the business? Has it always been on the business side?
It's both. I like the business, but I like the innovation of business and the creative side of business as well. And I think in the fashion industry, you have everything together. You need to be creative, you need to be innovative. I like product, I like the newness. You know, I never forget when I was with Didier Mateschitz, that's the owner of Red Bull. He said, you know, I said to him, you have an easy life, you just have to sell that pin and it's kind of easy. He said, no, it's difficult, you have an easy life. He said, you can come up with every 2 months with a new story. And I think that's really, indeed, he was right. The fashion industry, it's all about storytelling. And we have the chance to come up every month in the meantime. In the past, it was every 6 months. Now it's nearly every month. You have to come up with something new, a storytelling that the end consumer is interested in and that it is relevant for the brand. So I'm happy to be in that industry.
What was the story that Tommy Hilfiger was telling when you were a customer before you were working here?
Oh, I was always admiring the Tommy's like entrepreneurial part. The way he started when he brought his billboard and in Times Square.
The Hangman billboard,
yes. Hangman billboard. I was impressed about that story. And then I saw him more and more in the department stores. And I just saw his product, which was different, more innovative, more relevant for the end consumer. And what I learned, I think, is he was already at that time listening to the people on the street, that means to the end consumer. So he was already consumer-centric at that time, which is today even more relevant because it's all about the end consumer and
right.
You have to be relevant for the end consumer. So that triggered me. His product, and at that time it was very colorful. And I remember I had some other brands and I just switched to Tommy. And from a business point of view, but also from a collection point of view and from an aesthetic point of view, I just became a big fan. Before I even knew that I'm gonna work one day for him.
Well, tell me about how that transition happened.
Because
you've been with the company for how many years now?
I think it's now 23 years.
23 years.
Yeah. And all started again as a fan, and I had at that time my own agency in Switzerland, and I did some brands at that time for Austria and Switzerland, and then I heard that Tommy comes to Europe, and I said, I need to have that brand. I mean, I'm already dressed from head to toe from Tommy, so I want to do that brand. And well, in the beginning they were a bit skeptical because they said, yeah, you have more jeans brand, and how can you sell a sportswear brand? And it's really true what I'm telling you now. They had 40 different agencies who wanted to do it. And they said, basically, those agencies are better qualified than you. I said, wow, okay. I said, okay, come up with a suggestion to you. I'm gonna show you for 12 months that I'm the right one. So I'm gonna do it for you for free, for 12 months, but let me do it and I'm going to show you. So they really let me do it. And after 12 months, they said, you can keep it. And they also paid me for the 12 months.
And you've been paid by them ever since.
Since then, yes.
I mean, that's a testament to your work ethic. And I think this mindset of hustle that exists within the brand itself, how have you been able to combine that with your innovative creativity and mindset in keeping up with the change in pace and culture today?
Well, first of all, what I like, and again, what inspired me was Tommy's entrepreneurship, and I was thinking the same way. So having challenges, being interested in what's happening in the world. In the meantime, met Tommy, and I realized he thinks in the same way as I do, and you know, we had so many ideas together, and he had, you know, every day, by the way, he still has today many ideas, and I love that. You know, it's better you have too many ideas than none ideas, and it just started to work, and we realized we have the same values also, and we knew we had the same goal. He believed in product is king, and it's all about product, and if you have the right product to the right price point, basically nothing can go wrong. And we have a strong brand, we have strong product, we have a strong distribution, we have a strong campaign. So if you add all together, we are gaining market shares with always our entrepreneurial thinking that started from the beginning and is still valid today. And if you talk to Tommy, and you hear probably the similar stories.
What advice would you give to people in the business, specifically somebody who is in an executive position like yourself and works with someone who runs the creative side of things? How do you maintain balancing the values that you share, but also the moments where you might disagree?
Mm-hmm. So I think to challenge each other needs to happen. You have to discuss, you have to decide, and then you have to deliver. We call it the three Ds: discuss, decide, deliver. You have to all the time challenge how we can do more business, but we also have to challenge how we can get more innovation into the product. So it's a consistent challenge each other. And look, the business would not be there without creative people. And without having business people in place, the business would also not be there. So you need each other, but you have to find the right balance. And I really believe in the need of both sides. And you need designers that are also business-minded, but you need also management that is creative-minded and understand that both is needed.
But that doesn't always exist, especially in companies in brands that are so big, that there are the rifts that happen that make it hard for people to find that sense of synergy. So can you give me an example of a time that you guys were going to take a risk or did take a risk, and walk me through the process of what it was like to finish that?
Oh, we took a lot of risks. I remember we were holding hands and said, should we go? And we said, okay, let's go. So I can give you a few examples. And by the way, just before I start, I think the biggest risk today is to take no risk, but you have to take calculated risk. But I think it's completely wrong if you have a business and management think, well, we rather do nothing and then we cannot do anything wrong. I think that's already the biggest mistake, to do nothing. We do, we take risk, and because we do that, I think that's where we are today. So coming back, I think there were two elements where I said, my God. So one is the Gigi effect. You know, do we go with Gigi? And at that time, she had, I think, 2 million followers. And people said, well, she's not a typical model. And, you know, she is too young and not many people know her. And we just Tommy and myself, we felt it could be, it is the right fit. She fits to the company. She is very authentic. She has the same value as we do.
And this was your first collaboration.
Yes.
In that way. So
Tommy did a lot in the past with musicians, right? But I remember that when I was involved, that the Chi-Chi, that was the first.
And that was a really big.
Yeah. So to believe in somebody who is actually not known.
How did that conversation even start?
Well, Tommy came up with her. I think he met her, and then he said, he introduced her to many people, but nobody believes in her. And he introduced me to her, and I had the same click. It's a click. When you have the click, then you can go. And I do everything in my life. When I have the click, then I move.
Do you call that click a click, or is it your intuition or your gut instinct?
Yes.
What's the name that you give it?
The click?
The click. Okay. Signature, the click.
Yeah.
Got it.
And so that was against everything was basically, let's then go into the See Now, Buy Now, because at that time, See Now, Buy Now was done by few designers, but it didn't
work.
What
year was this?
Now we go 2010.
Okay. We're looking for help.
Something like
2013? Perfect.
13, okay, something like that.
Almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, something like that.
That's a long time.
That's a long time. And it actually became the best because Chi-Chi, became famous. I think today she has 30 million followers and she became a star. And our fashion shows were not just fashion shows. It was See Now, Buy Now. It was an event. And that made us, it's my phone, that made us where we are today.
What was the status of the brand before doing See Now, Buy Now, and before taking on the Gigi collaboration?
Before that, we had we had the family campaign. So the brand had different status in Europe and in Asia and in the US. So Europe was very strong. We had a strong distribution. We had great product. The brand was really growing fast. The business was growing fast. Just that we started in an office that was half as big as this, with 8 people in Europe. Today, that whole campus are 2,000 people. We started with 0 sales, and today it's over 2
Doing
billion.
Pretty good.
Yeah, we are happy. but it's hard work. It's not just, sometimes it looks like, all easy, but it was really hard work. And we were lucky we did sometimes the right thing.
Yeah, well, I mean,
we did also a lot of mistakes. But
well, tell me about some of the mistakes around that time. So the Tommy Now, See Now, Buy Now started, and that started with the big runway shows that were different than the previous ones.
Yes, the previous, we had a phase where we did runway shows, but then we stopped in between, mm-hmm. and then we came with that See Now, Buy Now.
Right. During that time when you guys were doing the runway shows before, was that something that, what would you say the intention of the runway show was at that time?
Well, I think at that time we just thought everybody does fashion shows, and to be relevant, we also have to do a fashion show. But honestly, it was not really like, the breakthrough, and yes, we were also at those fashion shows, but there's so many brands. Mm-hmm. And we said we have to do something different, and we have to come up with something that he's not done before. And that's why we came up with that See Now, Buy Now in a different way. As I said, it's not as a runway show only. It's an event that mm-hmm. That we created. And we're gonna go also to the next level. We mm-hmm. cannot, we don't believe we can go on with that for the next 10 years. No, we always, when things are working, we wanna do something different. We wanna be disruptive.
So it's not like if it's not broken, don't fix it. You guys, if it's not broken, don't fix it. You guys are always innovating.
Yeah. If it works, then basically, on the best peak, we come up with something new.
Has that formula always worked for you?
So far.
So far.
So far, so good. Yes. But that's what I mean. You have to take some risk and be disruptive, especially in the world of today. And if you see that the other big risk we took is we digitalized the whole company. So we started with the digital showroom, which in the fashion industry means when you're a buyer, you have a showroom, then all the samples are hanging there. We do that today in those showrooms, you see, all digital. We don't show samples anymore. It's all digital. And the entire the staff internally, but also all our buyers and everybody outside said, this is not going to work. You can
including the buyers.
Including the buyers, because I need to touch it. I need to. And I was so convinced this is going to work.
Why?
Because the young generation, they were already buying online. And I was convinced that this young generation is the buyers of the future. So they don't want to be on the knees and you know, make an assortment with all the samples in the showroom. They want to do it also digitally. So I was convinced this is going to happen. And today it's the biggest revolution, I think, in the fashion industry to digitalize that whole process, which makes it faster, better, more sustainable, and everybody can gain. So it's a win-win situation. Not only the digital showroom, but also digital design. You are much faster, you are much more sustainable, you are much more cost effective. The whole value chain, to digitalize the whole value chain, that's what we did already in this company, or with this company, Store of the Future. We implemented all. So others are just thinking what they can do in terms of digitalization. Mm-hmm. We have implemented it. And believe me, it was not easy, because I remember when I was also presenting that to the staff, you know, there was about, at that time, maybe 1,200 people sitting there, and I told them that we do digital showrooms, and everybody went like this.
Well, what was the response, and then what was your response to that?
Well, I just my consistent belief in that this is the right thing to do. I just had to be a kind of a messias and explain them and motivate them to believe in it. And the more I was talking, the more they were believing. And then I went to the salespeople and explained them. And then I went to the buyers and explained them and motivated them. And when they did the first order, they said, oh my God, this is much better.
And was there anyone who was resistant to that after?
There is one story. There was one buyer from Corte Inglés. He said, Daniel, I'm not going to buy in this showroom. Next season, you have to fly me anywhere where I can see samples. So we didn't have any more samples, and I always thought, what am I going to do with this guy? So he came to the showroom. I didn't tell him anything. So he came to the showroom and said, where are the samples, Daniel? I said, well, I have to tell you. there is no samples.
He said, flew him out to tell him there were no samples?
Yeah. And then I said, we have to give me a chance. Give me a chance. Believe in my idea or in our idea. And check it out. He made an order, a digital order, and it's a true story. At the end of the day, or at the end of 2 days, he was dancing. He was so happy that he made a digital order, because he was kind of dated, an older a guy, and he was so happy that he was able to do a digital order. So he's since then one of our biggest fan of the digital showroom, and was the only one. The rest was all convinced.
Well. So that experience, not always between a buyer and a brand, but just the experience of trying to innovate, but being received with resistance, happens often in all workplaces. What advice do you have for people who really want to get their idea across, who really want for people to believe in them, may not have an executive position where people just kind of have to listen, but really want to deliver on that idea? How should they go about doing so?
That's for me one thing. And that also happened then, you know, the success of that digital showroom was also clearly stated in this company, make the impossible possible. And when you believe in something, go for it. And don't give up when the first says no, when the second says no, and the third said no. Go. And when you believe, you will be right. And it's the willingness and it's the belief in something. And I see too many people giving up too early. When you really of course, you have to study if it really makes sense. But I was, in terms of that digital showroom, I was so convinced. I studied all, and I saw the new generation. So I was 100% believing in it. And the rest is just having the strengths, the motivation, and the spirit, and the passion to stay on track and make it.
What's a mistake that you see people making often when it comes to being innovative and changing the way things typically are?
I see that people are discussing too much. They are
taking too many meetings.
Oh, too many meetings. And by the time they talk that long until nobody believes anymore. And people give too many examples or try to find reasons why it cannot work. I'm completely not interested in why it's not working. I'm only interested in how it can work. And that's a different mindset of how you can make things happen. And I see too many. Just when you feel something, go for it, right? It's you know, whatever you want to wear, you believe it, go for
it. So there, it's the click, right?
It's the click
that you're talking about.
Exactly.
There was somebody that I talked to about, like, just intuition. I believe in intuition so deeply, mm-hmm. and it's something that's really important to me. And I remember he was telling me, like, you have really good intuition, but we are all born with really good intuition and clicks or gut feelings or whatever you want to call it. And he was like, but say that this is your intuition. When you grow up in a society that is constantly picking things apart, constantly saying no, constantly questioning you or judging you or putting it down, and then you start to do things for other people and what their expectations are, this starts to happen to your intuition and it gets blocked, mm-hmm. right? And you can't
Absolutely.
Access that click. So maybe you'll get the click and then you'll be like, okay, but what mm-hmm. if? How do you break through those walls? Because a lot of people they might be familiar with intuition or that click that you say, but have a hard time accessing that because of whether it's lack of confidence, whether it's, you know, having to carry the responsibility of a team, whatever it is, how should we be able to tap back into that?
First of all, I think you described it wonderful, that this
it
is the click.
It stuck with me when he said that, exactly.
It's perfect. And I experienced that myself in the early days when I just started with my career. I was sometimes, so there was an idea, mm-hmm. and I had a click if yes or no or how it could be executed, but I didn't speak up because I was afraid it could be wrongly received, or I just had not the guts at that time to speak up. But every time then, for example, an idea failed and I was not speaking up, I said, oh my God, I should have spoken up that and explained them why
yeah.
it could not work, or I should have explained them how it could work. And I had three or four examples of that where I was right, but I kept that click for myself. And after that, I thought, you know what, next time I'm in this situation, I'm going to speak up. And since then, I do it. And most of the time, the first click I have was so far more right than wrong. And I just can encourage everybody, speak up. If you see something, if you believe in something, or, you know, just speak up and share your opinion. That's what I mean with, you know, you have to debate with each other. A company where everybody says, yes, dear CEO, you are right. And, you know, like, I hate that culture. We have a culture of debating, challenging each other.
Okay.
Only when you do that, you get further. And my whole team, it's not a, you know, I don't like this yes sayer. I want to have people that think with me, that have ideas, that move with me and challenge me,
yeah.
and I can challenge them, and, you know, that's the right
culture.
Well, how do
you create that culture? I mean, you work for a fashion brand. That does not really typically exist within fashion, whether it be magazines, whether it be within a brand. How do you create a workplace culture that allows for, I would say, diversity in thought? And thinking differently, and then challenging the way that we think respectfully.
I only can say how I experienced it. So I'm Swiss. I tell you, in Switzerland, it's not so much you find people that are
debating. There's a saying for a reason.
They are kind of polite and, you know, very diplomatic, and they are not known to speak up. But when I came to Holland, this is more a culture of people that are honest, transparent, and put things on the table. And I like that culture. So I think it's sometimes a cultural thing, but you can learn from it. And I definitely implemented that Dutch culture into our values and into our company.
With
a mix of Swiss, you know?
A mix of diplomacy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's great to have that balance. I think that there needs to be a level of transparency in order to achieve it. So
always with respect. You know, you can say anything, yeah, but you should say it in the right words and always respectful.
Walk me through the process of how you would talk to somebody who you might disagree with about an idea, but you're very passionate about yours.
This is the what if answer. What if? I never say he's wrong, or I would never say this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
I said, that's interesting. When I disagree, I said, that's interesting. What if we would, you know, do this, but then we, and then I come with all my things. So basically I can, with that, change his whole idea into what I think is right. The what if answer.
How do they typically go?
It's, somebody says, hey, Daniel, I have an idea. Let's do this and that. Said, oh, interesting. And then I ask some questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always try to understand. And when I fully understand the idea, and then I think we should change it, is it? Then I go into, well, I like your idea. It's an interesting idea. But what if we would do it this way? And then you have him, and then, yeah, maybe. And then you get together where you should go.
I mean, then there's compromise that's involved.
Yes.
And
yes,
people, I think that as long as people feel seen, heard, and valued across the board, you can really accomplish anything.
I have a fantastic example there. So we are sponsors in Formula One, right?
Yeah.
So I remember at that time the team didn't want to go into Formula One sponsoring. And I was actually a big fan of Formula One sponsoring, but when the team said no, it's kind of, you know, I accept that because we discussed and we don't go there. So there was a Toto Wolff called me and Luis, and they said, hey, we need you. We would like that Tommy is sponsoring. I said, guys, we don't have to talk because the team doesn't want, even I'm a big fan, but we decided not to go into the sponsor Formula One. And then Toto said, well, meet me in London. And then he said, hey, Daniel, what if?
he did it for you.
What if we do it a bit in a different way? I said, well, that's interesting. And yes, that's. I just do not want to have only the sticker on the car. Mm-hmm. I want to go beyond. I want to understand how you, for example, data. You know, the data is the new asset. It's all about the data from end consumers. And I saw how Formula One is gathering all that data from the race, for the race and for the next race and for the race in a year. I was so impressed that I thought, oh, this is something to learn. So it was not only, you know, a sponsorship where we put the sticker. It was not only, it was beyond. It was how to learn to integrate data in our industry. I thought if we have so much data about the end consumer, we can plan our business much better. And then there was another part of Daimler. So he said, I said, if we can do it like this, we make a deal. So I was shaking hands with him. And then I came back and said, how do I explain that to my team that I made now a sponsorship? So I started, hey guys, I was thinking about this sponsorship. What if we would do it in this and in that way? So it opened up also, because they had the right mindset. And they said, if we do it like this, it could be interesting. And we started. And they were fully behind it. So it's the challenge. And it's I think people are sometimes too much just in their world and not thinking enough outside the box.
I also think that what's interesting about what you just shared is something that is one of my values, in that when people come with a proposal or they come with like something that they want to partner with you on, before you make the decision, you kind of have your mental checklist of like, does this work for me? Does this align with my values? And then how can I change it so that it's more authentic for me and it makes more sense for me? And I also deliver more for that, the other person.
Exactly.
So it's like making sure that we're maintaining authenticity, which brings me to my next question. You guys do so much in the innovation space, in the sustainability space, which a lot of people aren't even as familiar with when it comes to the brand, and accessible clothing. So these are really big topics of conversation that are happening within different fashion houses, but oftentimes people are taking like one route and they'll stand with that. Why was it so important for you to touch on all of the spaces and go about it the way that you guys do?
That's also, you know, innovation is not just, sustainability is not just a trend. It's something that needs to happen in this world. And we are convinced that we cannot just do one thing and then call us, oh, we are sustainable. So we actually do a lot more than people know indeed, but we didn't talk to the outside world yet because we first wanted to have the whole value chain and not just be sustainable in, you know, make sustainable cotton and then say we are a sustainable company. I think it needs a lot more. Mm-hmm. And we actually working on sustainability since 4 or 5 years. And today we have, we practically have hit all, tick all the boxes that we were looking for to really become 100% is a word that you never can say, but more sustainable. And only now when we have all in place, then we go to the outside world and say, look, we have a sustainable version because we want to also share that with our industry. And I think sustainability, you know, you cannot drive alone as a brand. The whole industry has to become sustainable. And you, we need the power of our competition as well. We have to do it together. We have to go to those vendors and say, you know, you have to change the process in this and this way. And that only works when we go as a group together. So
do you have those conversations with your competitors?
Yes, we do. And we share a lot to make this world more sustainable. And again, it's not just a trend. And we don't want to sell our clothes because over sustainability. It's for me like it's a given. You I would feel bad if we wouldn't get into that route. And by the way, I don't think that you can get 100% sustainable. And that's also not what needs to happen. But you should get every day a bit better than yesterday. And that, if you have that approach and that mindset, you do the right thing. And I hate those who go out and say, oh, we are 100% sustainable. No, but I admire those who says, I might not do everything right, but I have the willingness and I have the power to get more and more sustainable. And that's what we do.
Amazing. I always like to finish these conversations by asking this question. How is your heart doing today?
My heart?
Yeah.
My heart is always full of energy and it's a good heart.
It's a good heart. I'm so
happy. It's a good
happy.
Heart. And my blood in that heart is, by the way, red, white, and blue.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this conversation.
Thank you
for teaching us.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by myself, Alice Cottle, Lindsay Blum, Hannah Park, Adam Kafif, audio and sound engineering by Seth Feingersch, creative direction by Shawnee Pleasance. The soundtrack to this episode is produced by Portugal the Man. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, then talk to a stranger today and let us know what that process was like. You can do so by hitting me up on social media. All of my handles are at N-O-O-R, except for Twitter, which is N-T-A-G-O-U-R-I. Yes, I have a last name. And if you're in the U.S. or Canada, you can text me at the number 301-246-8894. Yes, it's really me. I can't wait to hear about your experiences. And of course, don't forget to subscribe.